Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Rachel Ollen, and in this lovely new series, I'll be giving you a glimpse into my wonderful life at Ballymalure. It's a life full of lovely friends and a rich family with laughter and money and hunting and money and that thing we never, ever talk about. Oh, and best of all, it's funded by you plebs buying our relish. Simply lovely. I'm Rachel Ollen, and my Ballymalure life is better than yours. So, today at Ballymalure, my friends and I are making some tasty treats for the locals to enjoy down at O'Brien's.
Yummy!
Delicious.
Divine.
And apart from the fact that we're charging loads for them, we're practically giving them away. I love the great outdoors, the sights and sounds of nature. Oh, look, a bunny rabbit. So cute. Oh, look. After that silly kerfuffle we never talk about, the family thought it might be curtains for our little multinational empire. But we soon found there was a higher power that would always support us, the lovely Irish media. Ballymalure relishes you.
I did learn they all say hi. Hi. So hoi. I walk on the Royal Canal regularly. That's my
it's
walk.
It's more like hoi. It's not really hi. It's hoi.
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 Yeah. But so I tried it. So I walk on the Royal Canal from Blanchardstown, Castleknock, down to Croker and further.
Yeah.
So the lads have been out having their cans of Linden Village, and I go, hoi. No, the gear didn't arrive yet, Rod. I said, I got to Shannon Bridge. That was me first one. All the lads were sitting drinking their flag, and so they went, hoi, shut up, you fucking idiot, Collins. That's what he said. So it's just, well, I think a lot of it is learned from the television, Paul. I mean, my grandkids speak American.
Yeah.
Because they watch Frozen, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
They say sidewalk and things like that. Yeah.
And mom. They say mom now, the kids.
But they've seen now they're watching.
Mom,
they're watching
trick and treat.
They're watching YouTube. Now, my son and his friends, they all say bro now and stuff like
what
that.
What do they say?
Bro.
Oh,
like, you know,
bro.
Yeah.
I keep telling Joe
it's
that.
Yeah.
Joe texts me, thanks, brother. I say, it's bro. Get with the script here, bro.
Yeah. Like, I judged this short story competition about 2 years ago. It was a school in Arklow. No, schools in South Wicklow where I live, and it was maybe at 7 or 8 schools. I had to read about 150 short stories, kids, like, you know, 200, 300 words long. And all of the stories ended with the kid picking up the phone and phoning the cop. Like, there was a vampire or a ghost came in or a murder, Axeman. But all of the stories ended with the kid picking up the phone and dialing 911.
Right, yeah.
I just thought that was brilliant. 911. Like, if you dial 911, you're going to get an engaged tone, right?
That's the American emergency number.
It's the American emergency number. Because just the power of American culture is so great that kids think
and they're being bombarded with it.
And they will eventually have to change the Irish number to 911 because no one will write.
You know, and I suppose there are. Like if you had a linguistics expert to examine that, my mommy, you know, that American twang, you know,
yeah.
that there are shades of that in the D4 construct.
The American one especially, a woman bumped into me in the post office the other day and I dropped all my letters, my Christmas cards I was posting. And she said to me, Sari. And I went, Sari and Sari are two things that South Dublin people say instead of sorry.
Oh, do you want to say that? Get out of me bleeding way with your letters.
But it's like...
But it's hard to say that. That's
Sari.
Not...
It's harder to say Sari than sorry. It's counterintuitive to say Sari.
It's the most difficult
feat
linguistically, I think, that D4, than any language I know. I mean, French is a lot easier to speak.
But you mentioned, I can't remember the word earlier, but it was the OU sound pronounced as AI. So I think, it was pound.
Bouncer.
And they
pained.
Say pained.
Roundabout.
And it's like a disavowal of vowel sounds.
That's
nobody
exactly
wants
what they
to pronounce the true vowel sound because it's like we will be identified geographically in a certain area if we say pound. I say pound. I say horse. Mary always pulls me up. Horse.
I think it's a bit like
it's horse, Paul. It's a horse.
It's a bit like it is very like the American jock culture where, you know, the wealthier kids, you know, gravitate to that and they go to the better schools and they get the better jobs. And you see that very clearly, I think, in the professions here. That, you know, these people who speak in that way, it's almost like the Masons, the Freemasons' secret handshake.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine, you're one of us, you'll do. Mm. You know, you're fine.
Yeah.
You with that Cork accent or that Connemara accent or something, like we don't really, you know, we don't know if you're one of us, you know, we don't know if you're we don't know if you're ruthless enough and icy enough to be one of us. You know the point I'm making.
Yeah, I mean, there is a thing among young people who move to UCD. I hear people laughing about this all the time about people who from different parts of the country who go to UCD or Trinity and lose their accents within about an hour of arriving in the Orts block, you know. I remember doing a reading in UCC maybe 10 years ago and a girl coming up to me afterwards and saying, I love your books. I laugh so much at your books. And I said, what part of Dublin are you from? She said, I'm not from Dublin, I'm from Cork. And she sounded like she was from Ballsbridge or something. And I said, like, you know, what's the story with the accent? And she said, I just really like the accent.
There's a D4 accent.
So she chose it like you would choose your shoes or your coat. For
that's why I think it sounds so unnatural to your ear. It doesn't flow. And the other thing about it is this, that I noticed that people from South Dublin, you know, who speak in that way, they all have their own variety of speaking in that way. They, you know, the words are slightly different. The vowel sounds are slightly different. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing. Like I'm now fixated on it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm in court and I'm hearing that accent, I'm like, oh my God, I'm writing.
Because
making notes.
There's no history to it. It doesn't come from anywhere, you know, and it's evolving. And there was a guy called Terry Dolan, who was a professor of English in UCD. And he was brilliant. And he studied all of this, you know. And he said,
Dion, you're getting some slagging today.
Yeah, keep quiet, Dion.
This is what I do anyway.
Round about.
But Terry Dolan used to say that there have been more changes in the way Dublin people speak English in the past 20 years than in the previous 100 years. And it was it's all accelerated because of you know, popular culture from America.
Yeah, and because I know, you know, some sort of people who've come up from the country to Dublin, you know, and they'd be grandfathers now.
Mm.
And their sons don't speak that way, but their sons do speak this way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so you can go from a Kerry grandfather to this.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, because I suppose it's also human beings' natural inclination to try to fit in.
Yeah. But the flip side to that is I've got a lot of friends who moved down to Wicklow like I did. And their kids are coming home and talking like that.
Yeah.
Their parents have absolutely no idea what they're saying.
What was that accent?
The accent is up and down like that when you live in Wicklow. Yeah.
They sing the words out. Yeah, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, it's like I have a Kerry neighbour. A Kerry neighbour, a very prominent GAA family from Kerry. Right?
From where?
Kerry. And their sons, born and reared up where I am, went to school with my kids and they've Kerry accents.
Yeah,
but that's it is a question of fitting in. And I think even in inflections and the way you speak, if you're in different countries, if you spend any time in America, you know you change how the words you emphasize to be understood. Because if you use the same emphasis that you use here, people don't actually respond. Yeah, so you've got to raise your voice at the end of a sentence or whatever.
To make it sound like a question?
Yeah.
But it's like not a question.
You go up at the end.
I think I'll have the steak sandwich. You know,
Call that in Australia, they call that the HRTs, the high-rise thermals. When you go up at the end of a sentence to make it sound like it's a good... And apparently it did start in Australia. It's not an American thing.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of seeking affirmation thing.
You go like with your Dublin accents, you know, Pat Gilroy, Brian Mullins, Godrest and people like that, you know, who speak in that very natural... I think it's a beautiful accent. The way Roddy talks, for example, you know, it's fully natural. It's worth something. It's authentic.
It's poetry.
And it means also that it's impossible to think... honestly, and to express yourself honestly, if you're not speaking in your own voice.
Mm.
And so you'd have like your Brian Mullins, you know, and you might have then, you know, fellas like David Hickey, the transplant surgeon, who I think over time has just slightly modified it just so that he's more easily understood in every possible company.
Yeah.
But it's still a very distinctive Dublin voice.
Yeah.
You know, so that makes perfect sense. Like we were talking with Al Foran last week about Martin O'Neill and how his very sort of North Derry accent has changed over time because he's going into dressing rooms with footballers from all over. And all he is more precise with his diction now than he was.
Yeah.
And that's entirely understandable. I mean, I can't let the occasion go by without talking about Brian Mullins because he's a year dead now. And Roddy came to a celebration of his life, and what a night we had. Roddy told the story about, you know, the repo guys coming to take the Mercedes back that he'd nicked after he got sacked by Cardiff and putting the
possession is 9/10 the lot.
Yeah.
I had the car, they didn't.
not at the end, you didn't.
Tell the story about Carl 8's end.
Yeah, they came to get the car on a Sunday. Nice peaceful Sunday afternoon. I heard a big truck outside and I thought that's a funny one, an oil delivery on a Sunday. Then I seen two squad cars as well. Next of all, I seen the car getting hitched up. So I thought, quick thinking, right, and Joe will appreciate this, threw the two kids in the back seat of the car, two young kids. A bit of a Mexican standoff with the guards. Guards going, Rod, Jesus, come on, we want to go home for dinner. We're just not getting the car. And the tow fellas, like, we're just doing the job.
Yeah.
I said, well, the kids are staying, so I threw the crayons in and the puller and boot. I said, I'm going to be in this one for the long haul, lads. I'm going nowhere.
I'm heading up to my house.
Did you not bring the McDonald's still as well?
McDonald's come down. I sent the kids up for two Happy Meals. I said, Rod, we'll get two Happy Meals. So then Carla started to panic after about an hour. And she says, Rod, what if they take that car with the two kids? I said, two problems solved. I didn't notice. I only found this out sitting in a van around the corner here. I think I told the story before. And you can't take you away when you're in the car. So they couldn't take the kids. So they all got fed up and never went home.
Well,
and then
obviously they couldn't. No matter what legal system you're in, possibly.
I would have put Carlin in as well. Take the lot of them. All my problems are solved.
He told that story the night of Brian's memory, and it was. I mean, the place just, you know, people.
Let me see, Joe. I don't find that funny. That's what I don't get when myself and Paul go away and we sit down and tell stories. It's just normal life to me.
Roddy, a day in Roddy's life, right? You might think he's exaggerating a lot of this stuff. I've seen a day in his life. I've walked around the city with him, right? And stuff happens in your day. It's like you're like Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm walking around Dublin. Like things just happen to you, you know? So Roddy and I went to Luton. Is Luton? I grew up in Luton. It's a terrible place, you know? Anyway, Roddy was, there was talk of you taking over Chesham United, which was your son's club, you know? Yeah. So anyway, I said, that's a great ending for the book, you know, like the sort of green shoots recovery, like John Delaney ruined your life, you were out of football. I said, what a brilliant story. You've been offered this, the not just non-league, non-non-league English club, right?
What's non-non-league?
The bottom.
Just below non-league.
Bottom of the bottom.
I take it it's not called non-non-league.
No, no, no. But you need to get promotion twice before they call you non-league, right? So anyway, Roddy.
I was wondering why I'd never heard of Cheshire United.
Cheshire United. But anyway, it's a great club and there's a man has taken over the club and he's putting a lot of money in and he's building a new stadium and all the rest, you know? So anyway, Roddy said, I might be taking the job. I said, great ending for the book, but I need to see it. So we go over to Luton. We fly two Ryanair flights, €12 each. We get to Luton. We're standing there. This man is sending the big limo to collect us at the airport, you know. We're standing here like this. And the next thing I just hear this man shouting behind me. And I look over my shoulder and there's a fella, Eastern European man. I think we can say Russian, can we? Because I don't think you can slander Russian people at the moment. This Russian man is absolutely screaming at his wife. And he's kind of got the, he's got a vest on. Correct me if I'm wrong, Roddy. He had muscles like bowling balls.
And tattoos. Massive. And she had a little child standing behind him.
And he was so angry. His neck muscles were strained and the eyes were popping. And he's going to hit her. And his mother was pulling him back. She's shouting at him. And his wife wasn't the least bit scared of him. She was questioning his manhood. She's looking him up and down, spitting insults at him. And he's getting angrier and angrier. And there's a kid, a child, like Roddy said, a 4 or 5 year old kid, hiding behind his mother's legs. And this killed Roddy, absolutely killed Roddy. And he says to me out of the corner of his mouth, look lively here, Paul. And I went, sorry? He says to me, loot now, but we're the only people there. Like, he says, we're going to have to take this lad down, right? Roddy, how old are you?
63,
right?
But he's a big, big powerful man.
That was about 35. Mr. Universe, right? We're going to have to take this lad down. And I went, I said, Roddy, I don't know what you see when you look at me, right? but I am not a fighter. If you want me to satirize this guy in this weekend's paper, I'll do that. But I just don't think I can.
Or describe the fight.
So Roddy says to me, don't worry, I've thought it through. You kick out his knee and I'll take him down with a punch.
No, it was
you had taught the whole, you taught the whole thing true.
The poor kid was terrified and he was, you could hear him 100 metres away and he was aggressive and he was right into our face and I thought he's going to nutter or something like that. So I said, Roy, I said, Paul, I'm going to war here. I have to take this fella.
No, you said, we're going to war here.
You're okay if it was just Roddy. You're
rather overestimated.
I'm going to get the water, Roddy. Well, you said a day of my life. I won't go home. They're all gone, right?
You got 3 packets of cigarettes.
I don't know. I gave some away the other day.
You gave some away.
How are you, my old pal? Are you all right for tonight? Where are you staying? There's a smoke. There's won't be our ear. Where are you from? Dungiven. Where are you from? Dublin. The people around this place. And when you walk away, it's worth £1 million.
These are homeless people. Homeless people in Doris. And I've been with Roddy when he's done this. And the funniest thing, people sometimes go, are you the boxer fella? Yeah. And you go, no, I'm his brother. Yeah. Ah, yeah, the brother, Bose. You won the double with Bose. Right.
But you'd think if you stood the two of them together and somebody said to you, which one of these was the champion of the world? Because Roddy carries himself like the super middleweight champion of the world.
That's what Barney Eastwood said. He said,
and he's bigger. Roddy's a big man. People don't appreciate a big, powerful guy.
I knew Steve.
First time I met him, I was really surprised.
You met was through Steve.
True, Steve. I knew Steve before I knew Roddy, and it was like meeting George Harrison, and then meeting the Beatles. Like, do you know what I mean? Like Steve was George Harrison, right? Yeah. And I thought this guy's amazing. And then I met Roddy, and that was like meeting Paul and John.
Years ago, Paul.
35
young
years ago.
Young man I was.
But Roddy, like Roddy was, so I was on all those trips. Like Steve was fighting for world titles, European titles and everything. I was on all those trips. And Roddy minded me. Like really, like, and I mean as a father to a son, minded me. I was like 18 or 19 and I was...
Paul looked about 15 when he was 18.
you were covering them for the Tribune?
For the Tribune and other papers. I was freelancing at the time and I'd put together I'd maybe cover it for six papers.
What sticks out in your mind about Stevie's career? You know, a moment or a fight, or was there anything that left an indelible?
Well, Eubank, sort of, I mean, beating Eubank in Mill Street in Cork was that was the moment, really, because I mean that was Paddy's Day 95 that weekend, and I'd been following his career for about 5 years. Boston, New Jersey, all those world title fights where he just came up a little bit short.
Italy, where you got the fizzy water for the corner.
I have to tell you the story. We're in Verbania in Italy. It's on Lake Maggiore.
Basically,
up
you were part of the Collins family at this
stage. I was staying in his room. I was the Milky Bar kid. That's what they called me, you know.
Actually.
But they used to call me the Milky Bar. Steve called me in court.
You did Steve's book.
What's that?
You did Steve's book.
I did Steve's book. Yeah. So we were very close. And, you know, Roddy tells the story about how we'd all be in a hotel lobby and everyone was drinking. And I was drinking Coke at the time, like, you know. And it'd be about maybe one in the morning. And Caroline would say to you, that young lad has nowhere to stay. Yeah. And I'd be sleeping in the lobby of the hotel to try. Because I was doing it for six papers, trying to break even. So I'd say I could stay every second night in the hotel, you know. And Steve got me a rate eventually. Yeah. Really kindly, Steve rang me one day and said, I got you a rate in the hotel. But anyway, mostly Roddy and Caroline would see me. And Caroline would say, he's got nowhere to stay. Yeah. And you'd say, you, up to our room.
That's right. Yeah.
And I would stay in Roddy and Caroline's room and they'd take the mattress off the bed.
Yeah, put them in the corner.
the Milky back into the corner. I would sleep on the base of the bed. You always took the mattress. Yeah, I never forget that, Roddy.
Can't say. The first time was in London. Never forget it. We're all going upstairs after winning. We were all well oiled. And Karen says, that kid needs to go to bed.
That kid needs to go to bed, yeah. I looked at 14,
said, get up to bed. I haven't got room. And then Carlin said, oh, geez, you can't leave him there in his own. That was it. But then when we travelled with the gang, then all the lads, we'd book a room the size of this and there'd be 10 of us in it.
Yeah.
And I'd always get the breakfast. Jim Collins was as cute as a fox. I'd wake up there and I'd go, Jim, breakfast, come on. So we go down and get the breakfast. I used to wake up and take people's water and drink. But with some crack, you know.
But the water. So Steve was fighting Sumbu Kalembe for the European middleweight title in Verbania in northern Italy on Lake Maggiore. It was kind of like a holiday resort out of season. It was November time. And anyway, we're at the fight and I was covering it for the Irish Times, actually. Me big break, Roddy, you know, covering it for the Irish Times. And Paddy Byrne, who was one of the corner men, he was a cuts man, wasn't he? Yeah, cuts man. Paddy was from Dunleary originally, but he moved to London. And Paddy came down to me and said, Paul, there's no water in the corner. You were doing the corner, weren't you? You and Paddy. Barney Eastwood wasn't there, wasn't he?
No, me, Paddy.
John Breen. So anyway, John Breen from Belfast. So anyway, Paddy comes down and he says, there's no water in the corner. This was round one, the middle of round one. And I went, that's interesting. He said, can you go and get me some water? I went, fuck. So I had to leave me. I didn't have a laptop. I was writing it longhand. These were the days when you rang copy and gave copy over the phone. And so I left my notebook and I went to, there was a tuck shop. It was in kind of like a basketball hall, wasn't it? There was a tuck shop at the back of the arena and I ran up the steps and I went up and I said, Aqua, which was me. I had the Italian at the time, you know, Aqua.
Fluent the Italian it was.
Brilliant. That's...
He says, Sin gas, con gas. And I went, absolutely, yes. So he gives me a bottle. I give him the whatever it was at the lira at the time. Go back down, hand the bottle to you or to Paddy or something. Anyway, the fight goes on. Steve lost, right?
Yeah.
I thought he was robbed. But
yeah, he was totally robbed. Yeah,
totally
yeah.
robbed. Anyway, we're at the press conference afterwards and Steve says, there was an attempt to nobble me here tonight. And I'm going, oh, this is interesting. Like, the Irish Times readers need to hear about this. And he says, I came back to the corner after round two and the water was fizzy.
And I just went, I only told Roddy when we were doing the book that it was me.
Never told
me. He says to me,
I got blamed for 20-odd years. I got blamed for 20-odd years. But
that told me the story. Roddy, that was me.
But that night, Paul, I was doing the timing as well as the water and the ice, right? And I'd go, minute gone, right? Minute to go, right? But in the confusion of the water, I forgot to put the watch on, right? And I'm going, oh jeez, minute gone. Minute to go.
You're just guessing.
Last half. And like, it's important, John, because it's like managing around last half, bang, bang, wind around.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll never forget it. Stephen come in after the round, he goes, jeez, that fella got along.
Like, we did, we cost Steve the European title, really, between the two of us.
Don't say that, be back in court. But, and it was, but we played football in Europe together, didn't we?
We did, we played against the Italian, there was a match between the Irish, the Collins family, essentially, and
well,
the Italian press.
It was supposed to be Brenny and
Jerry
Kill
Callan.
Feather.
Oh, Jerry Jesus Callan. Right. And Tom Cryan.
They were in our team.
And we turned up for this match. And these Italian guys came along. Jesus, they looked like Serie A, didn't they? Like
shin pads and everything. Getting their legs rubbed.
I was wearing cowboy boots.
He was wearing Winkle Picker cowboy boots and jeans. Right?
And living up to the Milky Bar kid image. I arrived at
cowboy boots.
They were very fashionable at the time, by the way, Joe. This is the early 90s. Everybody was doing
they
it,
were,
right?
Listen, you're younger than me. Yeah. Cowboy boots were never fashionable.
And they weren't Dublin fur.
Just maybe line dancing.
Cowboy boots.
No, the
by the way, I went to a wedding in Derry once, right? My friend Lisa from Maherfeld, and we were this dance came on and it was a line dancing thing, right? And absolutely everybody knew every step. It was like watching the Thriller video. Like everybody, and me and Mary just sitting there going, we were the only, it was like a secret society or something. So don't tell me that nobody ever wore cowboy boots in Derry.
But
they didn't catch it.
We had great times on the road. Brilliant times we had, you know. But that fight in Mill Street, did he tell the story about the airplane? I told that before, did he?
No.
How I got from Bangor?
No.
No, how I got from, I was manager of Bangor. Stephen was fighting that night. I had to be in Mill Street. Couldn't let the team down because they were in a situation. And it wasn't letting my brother down.
And he's fighting for the world title against
the unbeaten
Chris Eubank.
So I compromised. I hired an aeroplane from Newton Aerts to Farran Fawr. Right. Now, in my simple mind, I was on a beautiful woman, white leather seats and champagne.
Dennis O'Brien's private jet.
the golden toilet.
Till I arrived in the flying club up in Newton Aerts. And I went, jeez. It was like a Robin, you know, it was like the Del Boy's car with wings. Right? And it was, I brought a few lads off the team with me. And when we arrived in the airport, and it was a carpenter putting up a petition. And we got talking, and I says,
there was a what? Opened up a partition.
Partition. Right. So, got the crack, and he loved Stephen, and he loved boxing. So I said, come with us. So the pilot said, just weigh him, balance it out.
But I never, weigh him.
Weigh him. You had to get weighed. Right. Going like that. But, so we got the lad onto the flight. But I'll never forget, it was terrifying. It was small, like a mini minor.
Mm.
Right, there was six of us in it. Sorry, the pilot and five others. And the team's going, and they're skipping the beat, and the rain is coming, and one of the wipers is not working. And, you know, I'm going, oh, Jesus, oh, please just get. I'm thinking, the biggest occasion in the history of our family, and I'm going to be in a plane crash.
Your obituary is going to overshadow the fight. Yeah.
Forget about the world title, when his brother died in a
banger manager.
In a banged up L airplane.
Don't tell Stephen till after the fight.
Joe, honestly, we got there. We got there in the end. Obviously, and the pilot got locked that night and he missed his slot the next day. And I didn't go back the next day. I went on the train, but big Kirk Hunter and the lads, big paid, you know, they had to go back on it. But it was, yeah, it was brilliant. But that was the Mill Street one, yeah.
That was that, yeah. Like, that was just so emotional, wasn't it? Because it was, like, he'd won a world title the year before when he beat...
Poyet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when he beat Chris Poyet, but it did... It was a WBO middleweight title,
yeah.
And the WBO wasn't as well recognized then. But it was who you beat rather than what you won. Yeah. And to beat Eubank, to be the first fighter to beat Eubank, and to do it the way he did, and
in such a murderous division, Nigel Benn as well, Gerald McClellan, the G-man. I mean, these guys were savage, ferocious.
Reggie
fighters.
Johnson,
Watson. Michael Watson,
Michael Nunn,
had a few challenges.
Callum Bay, yeah,
Sugar Boy Malinga, another one.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah.
It was a ferocious division, and every fight in that division was a war.
Yeah.
But he went to America before, like long before Eubank and all that. Steve went to America, and you saw some of the later fights and fought like Kevin Thornton and Paul McPeak, and beat up a whole generation of top class American middleweights before anyone had heard of him. Like when you were driving out to RTE with the tapes of his fights, saying, "Can you show this on Sports Stadium?" Yeah. And they were going, "Nobody's heard of this guy."
That's what he said. You know?
It was a bit like you know what happened. We've spoken before about Irish Mickey Ward.
Yeah,
he was fighting through these, you know, fierce American opponents, unknown.
Yeah.
You know, so that whenever he was brought over here at short notice to fight the fighting pride of Liverpool.
Yeah, Shane.
Irish Shane Earney.
Who looked like
a male model. Yeah. They thought, this is going to be easy, but Roddy Rangwell says, Jesus, stay away from that lad. He's as mad as a barrel. He's as mad as the barrel of eels, which he was.
Mickey Ward.
And until those Gatti fights, like, he had no real public recognition. Skint. Yeah.
And then the fights, and then the film and the whole lot. But earlier Paul said we looked after him on the boxing trips. Well, what goes around comes around, because Paul's looking after me now. Paul's keeping me out of the council's department because he grabs me. Stop.
Don't say that.
He's like a lion tamer. Paul's like a lion tamer. And when I get off, I'm on, I can start with one topic and I could be millions of miles away within 2 minutes and libeling everybody. Paul just grabs me back in. He's the lion tamer.
Compliance department.
This sounds scarily familiar.
A teaser.
But that's it. Paul looks after me, you know.
And you're going on the road next year?
Yeah.
We're doing a show in Liberty Hall on the 2nd of February.
Yeah.
And we've done a few bits and pieces. We did Electric Picnic this year, and we did Kilconomics.
Yeah.
Dorky. A couple of Dorky Book Festival.
Sale.
But we're getting bigger, aren't we, Roddy?
Oh, selling out now. It's sold out.
So we're doing Liberty Hall on the 2nd of February. We're going to... It's just an evening of... of chat, funny stories like this, and there's talk of us maybe singing.
Oh, we'll have a sing song.
Go on, give us a blast.
There's talk of Terry Everston playing the piano.
Oh, Evo, he's playing the piano and that's it. He keeps saying, Rod, I wouldn't like the room like Terry are playing. That's it. Because when we used to play away from home, what's the hotel on the way out of Derry? The Everglades.
The Everglades, yeah.
Piano in there.
Yeah.
And when we played Derry, Caroline, same only. Terry would sit down and he'd start a little tinkle on the piano. And before you know it, the whole squad would be around singing. Yeah. Terry's brilliant bloke. And so I was walking, and Paul says, we have to get a piano player as well. And then Karen said to me, Evo, great piano. So I rang him up, and he had a few points. Yeah, of course I'll do that, no problem, Rod. Then I got a text next day, can't do it, Rod. I wouldn't make the round your night. He's doing it, and that's it, you know. But it's like we were down in Electric Picnic, and me and Paul done, I don't know what you call it, show, was it?
Yeah, we did. We did a show. I think people got a show.
I don't know what
to
call it.
I think people felt they got a show.
A show, right. So I had to go into the one next door for news talk, right. They were having one next door with big Fenton. What's his name?
Pat Fenton.
No, not Fenton. Just a big kid in the middle of the park, you know, big, great, lovely kid. The lawyer to meet him was, what's his name? Not Howard.
Brian Fenton, wasn't it?
Brian
plays midfield for Dublin.
Brian Fenton.
Yeah.
So I went in and there was a bit of a competition with his makeup things they do on the radio. And it was a quiz. So they went, right, blah, 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 blah. So he said to me, we're going to name the line of a song and you have to tell us the next line. So it went, I have been around so many towns. Give me that one, Mike. I have been around so many. Nothing more, nothing changed. The whole 400 people straight away joined in. Right? So I came to big Brian and he looked at me and said, you sing an Oasis song. So he sang an Oasis song. And then they just tore up the script. I just says, right, we'll have a sing song. So I picked the fella out of the audience and he sang Mr. Brightside.
Yeah.
Kid, only about 18. It was brilliant. But Paul was in the tent next door.
I was in the tent next door and it was brilliant, right? It was a... They were doing a reading of the agreement. You know, this play that's in the Lyric Theatre about the Belfast Agreement. Yeah. And it was very serious, which it should be. But there's a fella playing Tony Blair, there's a fella playing like John Hume, and it's absolutely brilliant. And then they did talk afterwards, you know, but there weren't many laughs in there, like, you know, but all we could hear next door was where it began. Oh, oh, oh. And it was proper electric.
So, what happened, Paul, there?
It's like Southside versus Northside.
I didn't know
when your neighbour gets a karaoke machine.
It's like when Joe
and
said,
you've got work the next day.
But Joe said to me earlier, you know, you're getting an awful slagging. I think one of the kind of bulletproof qualities of a Southside person is, I was like, well, you're not talking about me. Like, why are you not you're talking about other people?
That's it. Paul,
I don't sound like that.
But like on the north side, there's different abbreviations of the English language as well, and different tones and that as well. But Joe, like up in Dungiven, I was up in Derry, right? Would the city have a different twang than Dungiven?
Oh, totally different. Totally different. Derry City is more like out there, you know.
What about you and all that?
And Dungiven would be like, this is a proper Dungiven accent, the longest word in the English dictionary. Senor Auntie Fuxer.
Whoa.
Senor Auntie Fuxer, which translates, can you speed up a bit in the car? Can you accelerate? Senor Auntie Fuxer. Can you ever say, Jesus Christ, sorry, I tell you that man there, sir, fuck me, sir, he's a bad bastard. I tell you, brother, fucking, did you see your man there last week, sir? Jesus Christ.
And so, given when the boys
are saying, all right, sir, how's it going there? All right, I was going to say, and it's like that.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
You know, they don't give people, don't open their lips when they're speaking.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's preserved, the whole Don't Give them is preserved. Yeah. Obviously, I was away from home from I was about 11. And so, again, you're making yourself more understandable,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah. And yeah. less understandable.
Like
as
the
well,
problem. You're actually out there, bro. Sir, I'm going to give you a couple of minutes here, lads.
when people don't move their lips, that's an indication of people who are trying to disguise their accent, isn't it? Or disguise what they're saying.
Also, in Dungiven, you know, it is a bit conspiratorial.
Yeah.
Like the glamorous brunette, the first time she came to Dungiven, like, she just felt that she was frozen out, you know. I said, I'm not going back there again. Who's that woman there, Rolly?
It's like when Rolly said to me, look lively. Like, you know, he said it on the side of his mouth.
It's like, you know, the ad that you used to have for dry Thornton cider or something, where the metropolitan Londoner comes into the wee bar in the middle of nowhere and there's complete silence. He opens the door. Yeah. It's like, tsh. So you go opening the door of the Dungiven GA Club, you know, a stranger puts their head in.
Yeah. That's the way it works. We had a friend.
We're very friendly now. It's a great, it's genuinely a great community, but be suspicious, like, not as much as we used to be. Because obviously during the Troubles, everybody was suspicious. You know, if a stranger came in, it was like.
Yeah
but the famous one, when I walked up there, my dairyman, can't let me go. Like, I was letting people go. I'm a dairy man, you know. But we had a friend, he only got buried last week, by the way, and he went to all the fights and he talked, and he had a moustache, a little pencil moustache, and only spoke to you through a mirror. He sat in the local pub watches, and if he walked and he looked in the thing, he never turned around and he'd go, what's the story? You talk like that all the time, little pencil, big muscles, I won't name, right? But but as you say, different parts, like up in Castleknock, where I live now, I'm from Dublin 7, Carbery, and up in Castleknock, there's a bit of a twang up there.
Yeah.
And I was in the Moyos one night, and I got a belt of a golf ball on the head. Boom, right, bounced off my head. And I looked around.
That was the bingo, wasn't it?
No, a woman hit me with a golf ball.
Why? Deliberately?
Yeah, she hit me deliberately, yeah. And I told her, Jesus Christ, she says, oh, sorry, I thought you were your brother. That's what she said. So she was well oiled, right?
Which brother? That sounds like Mick.
I'm not saying it. You could hit him with a cannonball, it wouldn't bother him. But anyway, so it bounced out of your head. And anyway, so about half an hour, I called the man and said, come here, sort that woman out. But about a half an hour, 40 minutes later, a family came down and they carried her out. Now, very well to do family. But I'm very sorry. My mother is tired in the most. Now, where I come from in Dublin 7, you're locked. You're steaming. You're buckled, right? But go 3 miles up the road, you're tired in the most. You know, and I'm going around with a big egg on the top of my head. That's my brother's egg and carrying around.
All this probably does explain, Paul, why the IRFU has probably got more steady revenue and income streams than the FAI over the years, doesn't it? Like this sense of entitlement and knowing how to find where the money is. Because one of the things you did cover for a long time was Irish football.
Yeah.
And I was actually reading an interview today, and I think you told a story about the time you decided to give up sports journalism. Mm. And you said it was when you were interviewing a player at the training ground, and he was watching goals on Monday in the background.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I was with you that day. Yeah. I think I know that player. That was when we interviewed, if I'm right, I think, in saying that was when we interviewed Matt Holland together.
Matt Holland did push me over the edge, but
why does he push you over the edge?
Well, me and Dion, we were interviewing Matt Holland. We both arrived together to interview him. And the thing when you're a football writer in those days was just to try to get anything interesting. If you just could elicit any interesting anecdote or something. And as far as I know, Matt, there's an amazing story involving Matt Holland, which I think his grandmother was, I think I could be wrong, but I think he had a grandmother who was a cleaner in a country club, and his grandfather was the head of the country club, something like that. But they were from two totally different social classes, and they got together. That's what, as far as I remember, what the story was. And we were trying to get that story out of him. And you and I both knew about this, and we decided to double team him, you know. And I just remember, you know, I brought it up, and I said, tell me a bit about your how you qualified to play for Ireland. And, oh, yes, through my grandmother. And then you went, you said something, and then he went, it's actually a funny story about how they got together. And you went, oh, yeah. And he went, but that's for another day.
And I just went, that's that.
But anyway, the player, I remember the day I decided the game was up. I went to interview Clinton Morrison. Really? And I love Clinton Morrison. I still love him on the telly. I watch him on the telly. And this whole generation of Irish footballers, they're all pundits now, and they've just got so much personality. I'm thinking, where were you in 2003? Where was this persona I'm seeing now? But I went over to, I think he was at Birmingham at the time. Anyway, went over to interview him and sat down with him for, I'd say, about 9 minutes, and he watched Goals on Monday for the whole interview. He didn't look at me once. And at the end, he said, have you got enough there? And still watching the telly. And I just went, well, I've got all I'm getting. And I put my notebook back in my bag, and off I went. And my flight, in a fit of optimism, like, you know, I flew over at 7 a.m. My flight home was at midnight or something. So, like, thinking, it's the old day. We're going for dinner. Going to meet his family, the whole lot, you know. So, but I finished at 10:15 in the morning. The whole day to kill. Anyway, I was trying to get out of the club and I got lost, right? And I couldn't, it was kind of maze-like. And anyway, I'm turning back down this corridor, I'm walking towards Clinton Morrison, and he sees me and he just says, are you lost, mate? And I realised he didn't remember me from 7 minutes earlier. And that's when I realised it's over. It's, you know, the game is over. Get out of this.
Lads, thanks so much for coming in. It's been really sensational having you both here. Good luck with all future projects together and individually. And a happy Christmas to you all and to everyone listening from both of us.
And if there's anyone you want to say happy Christmas to.
Happy Christmas to you.
Could be everyone, here sometime.
Everybody. I hope everybody has a brilliant Christmas.
You would be a brilliant.
And Merry Christmas to you too as well. I've absolutely loved listening to the podcast over the last few months. It's just such a joyful thing. I said on Twitter, to hear a podcast where to have two men speaking quietly and in gentle voices, it's a very unusual thing, because podcasts are usually people shouty trying to get.
Hi, we're friends and we're doing a podcast.
Well, yeah,
that's friend what I wanted it to be.
We're going
to
do some life. We're going to do some life coaching.
I've only got 3 months to live. My friend said, and I said, Jesus, thank God. I thought you were going to say you were starting a podcast.
Well, it's funny.
Wouldn't Ronnie be a brilliant president of Ireland?
Well, I mean,
crowded field.
No, I mean,
he would be a brilliant
president. He walks around this city.
A man of integrity.
Like, you know,
a man of integrity and courage.
100%. Yeah. I think
a man
who'd
punch a large
brilliant
Russian in an airport to protect a woman.
Unlike
somebody
else
I know who's talking about throwing his hat in the ring for the presidency.
He wouldn't punch anyone.
But funny, you're talking about podcasts. I've done a good few, as you know. But I'm not just saying this, boys. The people have said to me, I heard the Joe Bradley and Dion one. Honestly, that's why I'm back here today. Trying to sell tickets.
And Roddy, you last... But one time I interviewed you, you said you were going to come out to my son's team in Dalkey.
I will.
And give them a team talk. So
I will.
Give them,
don't tell the locals. I'll be out there with one child. behind a tree. I don't know him either. He just turned up with a ball.
I didn't invite him, I swear.
Listen, happy Christmas to everybody.
Christmas. Merry Christmas. Thanks, so much.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks, lads.
Not to be a cunt, it's Christmas. Take a tip from Santa's helm. A box, St. Mary, have another sherry. Try not to be a cunt, Santa's helm. Try not to be a cunt, Rumpel's the reindeer.
I'm slaying up to Lapland.
Try not to be a cunt. C-U-N-T, cuntity, cuntity, cunt.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.